te whānau o Auckland Unitarians. Tēnā koutou ngā manuhiri. Nau mai, haere mai ki te hui o te rā nei. Haere mai ki te kaupapa o te rā. Ko Rachel McIntosh tōku ingoa. Nō reira, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā tātou katoa. Welcome all, church whānau and visitors, to this place of worship, virtual and physical, made sacred by Auckland Unitarians for 122 years. Welcome to those joining us remotely, and to those here in the building, and to those watching the recording at a later time. For those here in person, you're all invited to join us for a cup of coffee or tea and something to eat immediately following our service. It is our sacrament of hospitality. My name is Rachel McIntosh, and I'll be leading our service today. I, a sometime ardent atheist, welcome you to this Easter service, a non-Christian Unitarian service on the holiest of Christian Sundays of the year. I welcome you to the danger of this moment. This is my second Easter in the pulpit, and I will repeat some of the elements from last year. May you find in this moment and in this community the comfort and the challenge, the love and the energy you need. You are welcome as you are. You find us as we are. My opening words this morning are "Blessing for the Brokenhearted" by United Methodist Minister Jan Richardson. She opens this blessing with a quote from one of our Unitarian forebears, Henry David Thoreau. "There is no remedy for love but to love more." Let us agree for now that we will not say the breaking makes us stronger, or that it is better to have this pain than to have done without this love. Let us promise we will not tell ourselves time will heal the wound, when every day our waking opens it anew. Perhaps for now it can be enough to simply marvel at the mystery of how a heart so broken can go on beating, as if it were made for precisely this, as if it knows the only cure for love is more of it, as if it sees the heart's sole remedy for breaking is to love still, as if it trusts that its own persistent pulse is the rhythm of a blessing we cannot begin to fathom, but will save us nonetheless. Ted, would you mind coming up and lighting the chalice for us? For holy days on which we recall the old stories, we light the flame. For Passover, which reminds us of the courage and strength of those seeking freedom in the past, we light the flame. For Easter, which reminds us that love is our greatest challenge, we light the flame. For gathering today in this sacred space, we light the flame. For the opportunity to be together as a community, to remember the past, to plan for the future, to be alive in our present, we light the flame. And now, if you wish, I invite you to recite with me the covenant of our congregation, which John will put on the screen. There we go. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest for truth is the sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve humankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony. Thus do we covenant with each other and with our God. I preached in this church last year on Easter Sunday. My theme was resurrection. I spoke about the power of love over hate. In the words of Elizabeth Barrett Browning, knowing that when life is gone, love is left for shining. Since then, as most of you know, I've become a widow. My husband and your minister, Clay Nelson, died last November. In preparing for this year's Easter Sunday service, I have read all 8 of the Easter sermons he preached here in this church. I've seen that he talked about the necessity of experiencing Good Friday if we are to experience Easter. In preparing for the service, I have also come across a sermon from Rob Schwartz, UU minister in Boulder, Colorado. He comments that Unitarian Universalism has been called an Easter faith without Good Friday, that we tend to focus on the boundless goodness that follows from having a faith without a creed, that we shy away from lament. Today we will contemplate the whole of Easter, the sorrow and the pain of the crucifixion, the fear and the possibility of the empty tomb, and the resurrection. Buckle up. What happened? What is the story? We mostly do not believe in the fact of the resurrection, but we may believe in the truth of the resurrection. What do we know about Jesus? Jesus was a threat to an empire that relied on enemies. The Roman Empire relied on war to create peace. Jesus was an enemy of empire, a subversive, working to build the kingdom of heaven on earth, to build a beloved community, welcoming the prostitute and the tax collector. Jesus was a revolutionary, combating the might of Pax Romana with love. Jesus was a teacher. He taught in parables, stories that were fictional and in which can be found profound truths. What story can we tell? What is the story of our situation? What calls us and what are we called for? What are we building our beloved community for? My friend Bex writes poetry and they post it on Facebook. I asked them if I could use this poem they wrote just a few days ago. How it happens before the storm. There is the darkening sky, and the light is strange. It changes what you see. You feel anxious, not sure why. You feel restless. You might start a fight. You might. Something isn't right. There is distortion in the air and lightning in the distance. It is somewhere else, not here. England, the States, Israel, not here. This is just the start of Bex's poem, The Foreboding. There is an empire that is coming for us. To experience Easter here in this Auckland Unitarian community, we must also experience Good Friday. In the story of Good Friday, the disciples gathered at the foot of the cross to witness and experience the pain of the crucifixion. I've joined a Facebook group for young widows and widowers. For many people in that group, the pain of the crucifixion comes out in the question, why? Why me? Why my love? Why now? Why so young? In general, my experience is that the people asking why believe in an interventionist God, an omniscient, omnipotent God. And if you do, it makes sense to me that your pain will come out in the question, why? Here at the foot of the cross. For me, when Clay died last year at the beginning of November, the question was not why, but how? How? As I heard myself howling, perhaps for the first time since before I had words, for I had no words. How will I be able to be with other people when I am a great gaping ragged wound of the sort that makes us turn away from the screen when we watch medical dramas. How will I be able to be with people? How will I be able to be here at the foot of the cross? We commonly understand from the Gospel of John, or more likely in this non-Bible reading time, from the many depictions in European art, that Jesus' mother Mary was with others witnessing the crucifixion here at the foot of the cross. There is a vivid fictional account of Mary's story in Colm Tóibín's novel, The Testament of Mary. Mary testifies, "They want my description of these hours to be simple. They want to know what words I heard. They want to know about my grief, only if it comes as the word grief or the word sorrow. Even though one of them witnessed what I witnessed, he does not want it registered as confusion, with strange memories of the sky darkening and brightening again, or of other voices shouting down the moans and cries and whimpers, and even the silence that came from the figure on the cross, and the smoke from the fires that grew more acrid and stung all our eyes, as no wind seemed to blow in any direction. They do not want to know how one of the other crosses keeled over regularly and had to be propped up, nor do they want to know about the man who came and fed rabbits to a savage and indignant bird in a cage too small for its wingspan." In Colm Tóibín's telling, this is how Mary experienced the pain of the crucifixion, in confusion, here at the foot of the cross. And Bex's poem continues, though I start from the top. How it happens before the storm. There is the darkening sky, and the light is strange. It changes what you see. You feel anxious, not sure why. You feel restless. You might start a fight. You might. Something isn't right. There is distortion in the air and lightning in the distance. It is somewhere else, not here. England. The States, Israel, not here. Then there are droplets pattering. It smells like a river on the roof, on the deck. It isn't here, but those drops of rain sure are big. Someone shouts bullshit while you are teaching about respect for trans people. Someone yells out, "What about blockers?" during a student presentation. Five men break into a meeting shouting slurs. The wind whispers there are many banners calling us paedophiles folded up in garages across Aotearoa. What are they waiting for? Will the wind howl? What will it say? And so in the Easter story, after the crucifixion comes the empty tomb, a time of waiting, a time of in-between, time of fear and also of possibility. And historically, we understand that the disciples took to the hills. They hid in fear for weeks, months, in fear of the empty tomb, in fear that the empire would come for them too, and in fear, still carrying the pain. Any in-between time is a time of possibility. And after the crucifixion, we sit with our pain, and here is the possibility. Franciscan friar Richard Rohr warns, "If we do not transform our pain, we will most assuredly transmit it." What Clay said about the empty tomb is this: empty tombs foster faith, not certainty. Empty tombs do not mark the end of the chase, only the beginning. An empty tomb invites compassion born of empathy for those still looking. So from the empty tomb, we have the possibility of transforming our pain and of beginning the chase. What is our chase? What are we chasing? What are you chasing? Let's chase resurrection. Let us return to the story of the first Easter. Two disciples, not mentioned previously, were on the road to Emmaus. They met a stranger and walked with him for a time. When they reached Emmaus, the stranger made to keep walking, and they persuaded him to come in and eat with them. At that meal, the stranger took, blessed, broke, and shared bread with them. Only after that moment did they recognize the stranger as Christ. It was in loving fellowship around a meal that they experienced their first Easter, with the realization that hate had not killed love. Not even Rome, with all its legions, could do it. The love and compassion they had experienced in the person of Jesus had not died. It lived on in them. It gave them hope and courage to go on. That is what resurrection meant for them. And if we come back to our world, we see where Bex goes next. How it happens before a storm. It is in your bones what to do. Bring your family home. Make sure of the pathways. Gather. Bring food. Tie down what needs to be tied and put away the rest. Tend to the edges of your life. If the storm breaks near you, you will fight if you must. And otherwise, hold close to your loves. The droplets are flying. This is the empire we are facing. The droplets are flying. Great injustice is at our shores. Rainbow pedestrian crossings are being erased. Rainbow communities and other communities, Māori, workers, disabled, beneficiaries, face attempted marginalisation at best. What do we build in the face of this threat? How do we stand up? What is our resurrection? For Bex, it is hold close to your loves. It can be that for us. As Unitarians, we're also called to open our doors to new seekers, to strangers, to all who come and wish to share our meal, to build a beloved community. In our beloved community, we can experience resurrection, where hate cannot triumph over love, death cannot triumph over life, where injustice cannot prevail over justice. In the words of Rob Schwartz from Boulder, we are here to raise a lament, that old-fashioned word lamentation, to raise to the sky a witness to the reality of suffering, to peel back all the false faces of the world that hide that fact. Lamentation is not despair. Our work is to hold lament in one hand and hope in the other, and walk through the world with sorrow and joy as our everyday companions. We carry with us the pain of the crucifixion and the fear of the empty tomb, and we transform this pain through hope. We transform this pain in resurrection. Even if we don't believe in the fact of the resurrection, let us believe in the truth of the resurrection. Let us do it together in open, welcoming, and beloved community. Amen. Now Frank is going to play some special music for us, and while he does this, we in the building will share some hot wok buns. Those of you who have been in past years have seen these before. Kate, can you please come up to the front and demonstrate how we do this? And when she's done that, Frank, if you could start. just while we're finishing off the buns, that piece was called Easter Lilies by Catherine Bailey. Ted, would you mind extinguishing the chalice? And please feel free to join me as we say the words for extinguishing the chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Thank you, Ted. And now for my closing words. These words are from Maria Popova. The longer I live, the more deeply I learn that love, whether we call it friendship or family or romance, is the work of mirroring and magnifying each other's light. Gentle work, steadfast work, life-saving work in those moments when life and shame and sorrow occlude our own light from view. But there is still a clear-eyed, loving person to beam it back. In our best moments, we are that person for another. We do have discussion question, so I will ask John after the postlude to put people on Zoom into a breakout room. The questions are, how do you hold lament in one hand and hope in the other? And how do you do it in community?